Stay tuned now for Dr. Steven Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Steven Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Hi. Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody, to our next session of Bone Talk. Hi, this is Dr. Steven Zelikoff, and I'd like to welcome everybody to our next session of Bone Talk. First, I'd like to wish everybody a happy and healthy holiday season. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy New Year to everybody. I'd like to welcome my guest today, Dr. Christian Brotea. Dr. Brotea is going to be speaking about issues with neck and back pain, something that many of us have sort of struggled with over time. We all sort of get it. The question is that when do you, should you see somebody? Why does it happen? And most importantly, how can we avoid it? Dr. Brotea is an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at New York Medical College. He's co-director of the Spine Center at Montefiore New Rochelle and works over at Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison as well. So, Dr. Brotea, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Of course. We're happy to have you. Dr. Brotea's background, briefly, is based on engineering, which really fits in to, like, the building blocks of the spine. And he went on to do his spine training at the Cleveland Clinic, which is a world-renowned center in spine surgery. So, Dr. Brotea, can you tell us a little bit about what got you interested in spine surgery and treatment?
Well, I've always been interested in orthopedics, and I felt that spine provided me with a good way of working in my engineering background. I'm a chemical engineer. I graduated from Stevens in New Jersey. I'm from New Jersey, and I've been able to stick around the area, basically, my engineering background helped me with some of the anatomical challenges and some of the fixation issues that we deal with when we're talking about surgery involving the cervical and lumbar spine.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's a very, very, very complex system. But I think from our listener standpoint, many of us now are dealing with sort of a dual-fold issue with spine. One is that we tend to sit for long, long periods of time in front of a computer screen, whether for recreational purposes or for work on Zoom, for meetings for hours and hours and hours of the course of the day. As our neck gets sore, our backs get sore, and also now with our snowstorm recently, people go outside. They have to shovel snow. All of a sudden, they find their back is killing them. What are some of the reasons that people experience neck or low back pain?
So you're absolutely right. So neck and back pain are some of the most common reasons why people present to the emergency room. They go to the doctor. They miss work. They say about 80% of people at some point or another experience significant neck and back pain, which can be quite debilitating. Nowadays, most people, because of COVID, because of the restrictions that we have, staying at home most of the time, sitting a lot, those are some of the factors that contribute to neck and back pain. In general, the most common reason for neck or back pain will be a muscle or ligamentous strain, which is due to, as we just mentioned, repeated heavy lifting, sudden awkward movements, prolonged sitting, prolonged standing, bending, twisting, turning. Another reason for back pain would be a bulging or ruptured disc. Discs are cushions between the vertebrae and the spine, which, like anything else in the body, can wear and tear. And the soft material inside a disc can bulge or rupture and come out and basically press on a nerve, which can lead to nerve-related issues such as sciatica, pain down the arms or legs, numbness, tingling, weakness. Another reason for back pain would be arthritis. Again, arthritis is wear and tear of the spine, which is obviously very common. Some people are more predisposed to it because of genetic issues, and obviously aging plays a big role. But arthritis can definitely predispose patients to having neck and back pain. Osteoporosis is another issue. Osteoporosis is a weakening of the bone, decreased bone density, and it's seen usually, again, due to aging, but it's something that can predispose somebody to neck or back pain. Now, keep in mind that there are a lot of reasons why people can have neck and back pain, some of them which are not spine-related. So in general, when patients experience significant neck or back pain, we ask them to follow up with a primary care physician or a specialist to make sure that other reasons for back pain, such as kidney stone, abdominal issues that can present as back pain, are ruled out. And if the symptoms persist, then they should follow up with a back specialist.
So you separate out what we call sort of acute or sudden pain versus stuff that's sort of chronic and long-acting.
Right. So, like I said, 80% of people at some point experience neck and back pain. Most of these symptoms are pretty quick resolving. 90% of people get better from a neck or back pain episode within a few days, sometimes a couple of weeks. However, if the symptoms persist for more than a few days or a week or two, if it's severe, if the pain does not improve with rest, if it starts to extend down to the arms or the legs, patients start experiencing weakness or numbness or tingling in the arms or legs, if it's associated with unexplained weight loss, I mean, any of these factors come into play, they should definitely follow up with a spine specialist for a full evaluation.
Okay. So if you could, I mean, because I think the spine is so complex, you started talking to us a little about the discs in terms of everybody's heard about, I have a slip disc. That's a common
right.
term that people talk about. But there's other areas around the spine which sort of can lead to pain. You mentioned arthritis. Can you just briefly describe just to our listeners so they have an understanding of, like, maybe talking about the facet joints and some of the joints and the irritation in that area that can lead to some pain, and also some of those areas that potentially could be treated. And, again, this is Dr. Christian Brotea from Specialty Orthopedics, who's co-head of the Spine Center at Montefiore New Rochelle.
So anything about the spine can become injured and can be a cause of pain. So that includes the bone, and then we just talked about osteoporosis, which can lead to a fracture, can cause significant disability, neck or back pain.
Is that like a compression fracture? Or?
Compression fracture, which is probably the most common reason for back pain in elderly patients, especially after some more significant activities, heavy lifting, twisting, turning. We're talking about injury to the muscles and ligaments around the spine. We can talk about the injuries to other soft tissues around the spine. And one of the biggest ones that we talked about would be the discs. The discs are the cushions between the vertebrae.
Right.
And these cushions, these discs, are subjected to a significant amount of stress when somebody is sneezing, when they do any type of strenuous activities, when they're bending. These discs are prone to injuries. They also wear and tear with age, and that's where arthritis comes into play. Wear and tear of the ligaments, wear and tear of the facet joints, which are the joints in the back of the spine, wear and tear of the discs lead to degeneration, and that's one of the factors that can predispose somebody to experiencing neck and back pain. So now, people talk about slip discs, they talk about herniated discs,
right.
They talk about disc bulges. The bottom line is these are all terms for basically wear and tear of a disc or an acute injury to the disc, which would be a tear or a rupture. The reason we worry about a tear or rupture of a disc is because a small piece of the disc, or a large one, but a small piece of disc typically can come out and can compress one of the adjacent nerves, which can lead to arm or leg symptoms.
Is that what they talk about when they talk about sciatica?
So sciatica is basically a pinched nerve in the lower part of the back, which we call the lumbar spine. It's one of the most common reasons why people come in for evaluation, and it's one of the most common presentations of a disc herniation. Now, you can have a tear in the disc, a disc herniation, quote-unquote, or a slip disc, and not have any sciatica-type symptoms and just present with back pain. Regardless, once again, 90% of people improve and they experience relief with time with treatment modalities that we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Okay. Now, and thank you. That's very, very, very helpful. Again, this is Dr. Christian Brotea with Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York, also co-director of the Spine Center at Montefiore New Rochelle and an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery out of Westchester Medical Center. So we've talked a little bit about the concept of herniated discs. Obviously, they're pretty common. People have had issues with their back. In terms of treatment options and the role of exercise, how can people try to avoid this? I mean, we sit in front of a computer looking like a shrimp cocktail, kind of all hunched over. I mean, how can people try to avoid this and avoid ending up having problems with their back and neck?
So the key to prevention, basically the idea is to keep your back healthy and strong. So number one, you have to consider exercise. And we're talking about low-impact aerobic activities, things that don't strain or jolt your lower back, exercise that can increase the strength and endurance of your back and allow your muscles to function better. Low-level exercise like walking and swimming are very good choices. Now, everybody's physical abilities would allow them to do different types of exercises, but just exercise to emphasize core strengthening, postural control, these are the things that help in the long term with prevention of occurrence of neck and back pain. The idea, again, is to build muscle strength, build flexibility, work on abdominal and back muscle exercises, strengthening your core. Weight. So maintaining a healthy weight. Being overweight is a significant issue and leads to straining your neck and back muscles. You have to compensate for that extra weight. So you're overworking, basically, your neck and back, which leads to neck and back pain. Smoking, for example, increases your risk of low back pain. Smoking, among other things, increases decreases the blood flow around the discs in your lower back, can cause osteoporosis, can cause disc degeneration, all of which can, again, lead to back pain. So the idea is to work on your posture, to work on your core strength, stand smart, don't slouch. If you have to stand for a long period of time, place one foot on a low footstool to take on the load of your back, alternate your feet, sit smart. So if you're going to sit for a prolonged period of time, which is what we're all doing nowadays, try to choose a chair that has good lumbar support. And by that, what I'm talking about is basically sitting upright, arching your lower back. If you have to, for extra lumbar support, try to use a small pillow or a rolled-up towel and place it over the lower part of your lower back and arch your back over it. The idea is to avoid slouching and bending forward. Try to sit up straight. If you're going to lift something, if you're going to have to pick something up, especially if it's something heavy, try to keep that weight close to your body. Try to use your hips and your knees, and try to maintain your back in a neutral position. So these are all things that you can do to prevent as much as possible neck and back pain.
That's very, very informative. People are using standing desks now when there is an alternative. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, again, we want to avoid prolonged sitting. Almost nobody can sit for a prolonged period of time in a perfect sort of neutral position. Everybody at some point starts to slouch, especially if the desk is too low, if the computer monitor is too low, and we start kind of looking down. Standing desks would allow us to stand up, which is advisable, especially every 20, 30 minutes. Try to stand. Try to sort of stretch your back a little bit. The other advantage of a standing desk is that it allows you to position it so even if you are sitting, your typing position, your monitor is a better angle compared to your body, and it allows you to sit up straight as opposed to slouching down looking at a screen on a lower desk. So I personally endorse, I like the idea of a standing desk and actually use one myself.
That's great. So, again, good posture, good core strengthening, keep our weight down, particularly as the holidays are coming up. You want to avoid that extra a roll or that extra bowl of pasta if you can avoid it.
That's correct.
And then get into a good exercise program to keep your core lean. Now, you know, every so often we do all those things, and unfortunately it doesn't work, and people do end up with pain. They have numbness and tingling, and they come in for an evaluation. The most common issues that people talk about and hear about with back problems is herniated discs, which you talk about, where it's sort of like a jelly donut that sort of like pops out and irritates your disc. Also, spinal stenosis is something that people talk about. What is spinal stenosis?
So spinal stenosis is it's another term that's sort of been thrown around, and people use it, and it's a very common diagnosis. Basically, what it means is stenosis means narrowing. So what we're talking about is narrowing of the spinal canal. The problem with narrowing of the spinal canal, and it happens usually because of a disc herniation where the disc pops out of place or a significant disc bulge, or it happens because of arthritis, which can lead to bone spurs and thickening of the ligaments around the spine, all of which, again, pinch or narrow down the spinal canal. The problem with the spinal canal being narrowed is that it can lead to pinching of the nerves inside the canal. And that's when people have or experience what's called claudication, which is a fancy term for saying you're pinching the nerves in your lower back, which leads to leg pain. If you pinch the nerves or the spinal cord in your neck, it can lead to arm pain or arm numbness, tingling, weakness. So stenosis is very common because, again, it occurs due to a number of common conditions. However, some patients can become really symptomatic from it. And it's something that should be diagnosed properly and treated properly.
Now, you're a spectacular surgeon, and you're amazing at what you do, and I know that your patients are very, very happy. But obviously, the big question is you don't use surgery as a first resort, and you're very conservative. So the question is, at what point does somebody with neck or back pain come and see you? At what point should they be evaluated by you? When they do see you, what are some of the conservative approaches that you take for managing disc problems and spinal stenosis?
Look, and I'm going to say this as a surgeon. The truth is that 90% of the patients that then come to the office with onset of neck and back pain, they get better on their own. They get better with conservative treatment. Very rarely somebody benefits from surgical intervention, and maybe I'll go over that in a little bit. But first, as far as conservative treatment, we no longer advocate rest. We advocate light exercise. We're talking about physical therapy, emphasizing core strengthening, emphasizing postural control, weight loss, even over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medications such as Advil, Aleve, or extra-strength Tylenol. People talk about chiropractors, which I feel that they can be very helpful. Acupuncturists can also help with acute onset of neck and back pain. The idea is basically to buy time, allow your body to heal, and like I said, 90% of people, they get better. Now, a small percentage of patients, they come in experiencing severe neck and back pain, which is radiating to the arms and legs. It is associated with what we call neurologic deficits or significant numbness and weakness of the arms and legs. And those are cases that need to be watched very carefully from a surgical perspective and ultimately may benefit from surgery. But again, that's relatively rare.
Again, this is Dr. Christian Brotea, who's co-head of the Spine Center at the Montefiore New Rochelle and with Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York. So, Dr. Brotea, people also hear about injections as a way of addressing some symptoms in the spine. At what point are injections a good idea? At what point do they sort of stop being effective and then surgery sort of comes into play?
So most patients benefit from non-invasive treatment, the methods I just talked about. Sometimes if the pain is quite severe, if the imaging reveals a significant disc herniation, a pinched nerve, more acute or new onset pathology, some of those things would respond to an epidural steroid injection and seeing a pain management specialist. The idea behind a steroid injection is to calm down inflammation. I mean, that's what a steroid does. And people, when they present with severe pain, they're acutely inflamed. The steroid provides relief of that inflammation and helps with the pain significantly. It's just another way of treating a patient conservatively with the idea that, again, 90% of patients, if you treat them for several days or weeks, they get better. The patients that don't get better, the ones who present with worsening, let's say, neck and back pain or weakness and numbness and tingling, those are the ones that we talk about surgery if it's an option.
Now, when surgery, it does become an issue. I know that you really, really focus on minimally invasive procedures when possible. Tell us a little bit about some of the more common procedures that are done in the spine. And also with COVID and everything that's going on right now, I know the patients are very hesitant to go to the hospital to get evaluated. Can you tell us about your thoughts on getting involved from that standpoint and some of the surgical procedures that you're involved with?
So, again, most of the patients get better without surgical intervention. I would say maybe 5 to 7% of the patients I see in the office ultimately do need surgery. The idea behind neck or back surgery is to keep it as least invasive as possible. And that's where the minimally invasive surgical approaches come into play. When we're talking about a pinched nerve from because of a disc herniation, what we can do as surgeons is go in through a small incision and relieve the pressure of the nerve by removing that piece of disc. So shaving off the disc, shaving off a little bit of the bone back there to give the nerve more room and allow it to heal. When we're talking about a fracture, sometimes patients benefit from a cement injection. If it's an osteoporotic fracture, that's something that a pain management specialist can do. If we're talking about correcting a deformity of the neck and back, which typically leads to chronic or long-standing symptoms, that's when the use of more invasive methods, such as a larger incision, the use of instrumentation comes into play. And that's relatively rare. Most patients, if they do need surgery, benefit from a small, minimally invasive surgery to address the nerve pinching.
And how well do people do with surgery, and what's the usual recuperation time after back surgery?
So typically, the smaller the surgery, the quicker patients are able to get back to work, to their normal activities. So some of the operations we perform, which involve a very small incision over the front of the neck to address a disc herniation, pinching a nerve, let's say, or a small incision in the lower part of the back, addressing a nerve pinch from a disc herniation in the lower back, those patients are able to return back home the following day and slowly return back to their normal activities over the following several weeks. If we're talking about a more involved surgery, something involving the use of instrumentation, or we have to do a correction of a deformity, scoliosis surgery, those surgeries usually would set some more significant precautions on the patient's side for 2 to 3 months. It depends. It depends on the extent of the surgery.
And it also sounds like the longer the symptoms occur and the longer the patients have issues that are untreated, the more difficult the recuperation is going to be in terms of the complexity of the surgery and the length of recuperation as well.
Yeah, so in general, again, we try to buy time. We try to pursue conservative treatment options, and patients do get better. However, if the symptoms do last for a long time, or if the patient does not seek care or treatment, those are the patients that typically don't do as well with surgery, and it takes them longer to recuperate, because at that point, by the time they do have surgery, they're experiencing significant weakness, numbness, neurologic things, which are more difficult for the body to sort of sort out and heal, even with surgery. So, in general, we do ask patients if they do experience any significant numbness, tingling, weakness, any kind of neurologic issues, or if the pain remains intractable, that their neck and back pain does not get better with just conservative treatment, to follow up and be reevaluated and look at other options.
So in closing, again, this is Dr. Christian Brotea, who's co-head of the Spine Center at Montefiore New Rochelle and also works at the Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York, where he's the head of the spine service and also is an assistant professor at the Westchester Medical Center. So, Dr. Brotea, any final words that you'd just like to leave our audience with regarding their spine health?
So at this point, especially given what's going on with COVID and being at home, trying to be careful and being safe, I urge patients to, and our audience in general, to be mindful of their posture, to be mindful of their levels of exercise, weight gain, and these are things which are all basically risk factors for neck and back pain. I urge them to work on their posture, which is probably the most important thing.
So, again, lots of strengthening. If it's physical, it's therapy, and I think that that's the most important thing to take home. So stay active, keep moving, don't sit for long periods of time, keep our weight down, particularly in this holiday season. And again, stay healthy. I think that that's the biggest issue. And again, it sounds like most spine things do get better, but when you have associated numbness or tingling or symptoms that aren't getting better on their own, then at that point, it sounds like you should be seeking out a specialist like Dr. Christian Brotea to evaluate your neck or your back and in terms of management. So, again, Dr. Brotea, I want to thank you for your time and
thank you so much for joining
us on Bone Talk. Again, to all our listeners, have a Merry Christmas, a happy and healthy New Year, and hope to speak to all of you and to have you all join us next year for our next version of Bone Talk. Thank you. I'm Dr. Steven Zelikoff.
Happy holidays.